This is The Takeaway. I'm John Hockenberry, coming to you today from St. Louis Public Radio. We're on a hill overlooking the Mississippi River and the famous St. Louis Gateway Arch. In this collision of rivers, the city of St. Louis was born. The water highway north from the deep south, taking the poorest of the poor after the Civil War to the prosperity of what would become the industrial wealth of the Gilded Age. Wasn't shared equally, though. This is the city of second chances, remade lives, and yet it also represents a place where a few blocks separates the richest from the very poorest citizens. The state of Missouri is nearly right in the middle of the pack when it comes to income inequality in the U.S., ranking 22nd out of 50 states, according to a report issued last year by the Economic Policy Institute. On Friday, the Trump administration disclosed the financial statuses of its top officials, part of a prolonged government tug-of-war with the media over what ultimately may become the release of the Donald Trump tax returns, which will tell us some more about the Trump empire. But while the White House seems proud that its officials have more substantial financial holdings than members of the Obama administration, perhaps that's cynical, perhaps not, the disclosure once again calls into question whose interests are actually at the heart of this administration. Stephen Fusari is a professor of economics and sociology at Washington University, right here in St. Louis. He joins me now to discuss where income inequality might be going under President Trump. First of all, Professor, welcome.
Thank you. Good to be here.
Secondly, is there a point where you are too rich to be able to see an undistorted economic reality when you're making economic policy?
Well, I think there is something to that. I think that in the policymakers are coming usually from very high profile jobs, elite universities and things like that. And maybe what the Trump phenomenon partially showed us was how the Washington elites are somewhat disconnected with people who have been struggling for 10 years, 20 years, even 30 years to reach the kind of lives that they expected to see when they were younger.
If you were to aggregate this Trump administration, who do they represent as a constituency, and how do they relate to the rest of the nation from a financial viewpoint?
Well, the Trump administration as a whole is extreme, as you just said, John, in the wealth of the people that have taken positions. Trump himself was proud of the fact, is proud of the fact, that he amassed a huge amount of wealth and views that as a badge of success. And he surrounded himself with many people who were coming from Wall Street or other very high income, high profile positions. So it is the case that the administration is very, very, very different in terms of its economic profile than the average American citizens, and certainly the people in the lower part of the income distribution, who are widely viewed to have given Trump the close victory that he got. So it's a very different group from the people as a whole. But that's maybe not so unusual, that our presidents typically are not drawn from the middle class as this goes forward. But in the Trump case, it's really pretty extreme.
And there were rich people in the Obama administration, Penny Pritzker of the Commerce Department, among others. But it occurs to me that since this party and this administration likes to evoke the Reagan era so much, the 1980s, I do recall that as an argument made that the success of one piece of the economy is going to transfer into success for another piece of the economy, the old trickle-down economics. And while I don't recall the income distribution of the administrations back then, it seems to me this is perhaps a subtle but really important shift. Back in the 80s, they talked about trickle-down economics as some sort of mechanism that they looked at from afar. Here, it seems that people like Trump and the people he's surrounded himself with are absolutely convinced that trickle-down works so well. In fact, that their success must be other people's success as well.
Yeah, that's an interesting observation. You know, I was a young professor in the Reagan administration. I came to Washington University just a year after Reagan took office, right out of graduate school. And I remember those years, too, and the theory of trickle-down economics, I sometimes talk with my students about whether it's a trickle or a waterfall in some respects, becomes the big question for those kinds of policies. You know, overall, I think the evidence is not very supportive of the idea that when you have big tax cuts at the highest levels of the income distribution, that this has a big effect on middle class and certainly on the people at the bottom of the income distribution. We had lots of big tax cuts in the 1980s and the in the early 2000s with the Bush tax cuts especially. And we saw income inequality continue to grow, the rich doing better than everyone else during this period of time. So in some sense, there's not a lot of support for that trickle-down theory. And I agree that there's a confidence in the Trump administration that the kinds of tax plans they're putting out there will help everyone. He emphasizes the tax cut for the middle class. His very wealthy Treasury Secretary, Steven Mnuchin, also talks about big tax cuts for the middle class. But whenever you see a proposal, the benefits go very disproportionately to those at the very top of the income distribution. So I'm a skeptic of the argument, and I think there's a faith that it's there. I think the people that voted for Trump appreciated the way he identified with their situation, that he connected with working people, with people whose economic outcomes were disappointing. But I'm skeptical that the policies are actually going to do what the people who voted for him hope for.
We're talking with Stephen Fazzari, professor of economics and sociology at Washington University, right here in St. Louis. Stephen, when we talk about economic development, I've been, you know, here for about 24 hours in St. Louis and looking at the economy in Missouri. There does seem to be a new economy emerging here in Missouri. I don't know how you would characterize that. There's certainly not the let's go back to the old, steel mills and old kind of factory economy sense on the street. But how does the economic success of the Trump administration distort or help their view of economic development, the kind of industries to support versus the ones to walk away from?
I think it's a really important question. The Trump campaign really emphasized manufacturing. There was the early trumpeting, to use a bit of a pun there, of the few hundred jobs that supposedly were saved at Carrier, the manufacturing jobs. There's talk about bringing back coal jobs. And if you look at the economic trends over time, you see that these things are very unlikely to work, that manufacturing, mining, these kinds of things have seen long-term declines in the share of employment that they represent. And so when people want that to come back, I think Trump gave us the sense that that was possible, but I don't think it's true. I agree that here in St. Louis, you see this. You see biotech jobs. You see a new sector, which is more in the computing high-tech area and other kinds of things like that. And, of course, you see a big increase in service sector jobs, which historically have been paying less. So it seems like we have this bifurcated economy. The tech leading jobs are doing very well. More jobs being created there, higher pay. And then a lot of the job creation is in a relatively low paying service sector. And it's just not clear what policies of the Trump administration will change those trends, despite the rhetoric.
Well, what is clear is that it will take a nuanced policy to support both ends of that service sector and that high tech sector. It's not something you're going to do with just one feel-good executive order. Back to the tax cut before we go. When extremely rich people decide to make tax policy, is it the case that they tend to focus mostly on other rich people because they're paying a bigger number in terms of taxes?
I can't really tell you what the policy or what motivates this idea that cutting taxes for the rich is going to be so beneficial. I suppose it seems sensible that people who are very rich and see the undoubtedly high amounts of tax they pay, a large percentage of their income goes to tax. There's no doubt about that. And they feel like, well, this is the government's taking too much, and this in some sense is unfair. But that's a big stretch from that perspective to the idea that somehow these tax cuts are going to unleash great amounts of productivity and entrepreneurship and the kinds of things that would create jobs more broadly across the income distribution. And like as I said earlier, I don't think the evidence really supports that perspective. You know, we've had a technology boom in the late Clinton years, probably the best period of time since the 1960s in the U.S. economy, when tax rates actually been risen somewhat. So there really isn't a lot of evidence to support this idea that tax cuts for the rich are in fact going to trickle down in any meaningful way. It's a policy that I don't think will help those who put Donald Trump in office.
Stephen Fazzari is a professor of economics and sociology at Washington University. Thanks so much.
Glad to be with you, John.
You come to the New Yorker Radio Hour for conversations that go deeper with people you really want to hear from, whether it's Bruce Springsteen or Questlove or Olivia Rodrigo, Liz Cheney, or the godfather of artificial intelligence, Geoffrey Hinton, or some of my extraordinarily well-informed colleagues at The New Yorker. So join us every week on The New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.